So it is an education campaign. This follows some of the work we've done trying to assess what's on tables. We presented that at ACC, and I know Kara has presented another piece to that where they implemented some surveillance at Western State. So this is an education campaign to see if we could make a difference. And here's our research team. Michael Ramshran is here. Harrison Detan is here. Rod Floyd is in the back. They're all involved in this project, and glad that they're here, and also some of our guys over at the LA campus up the road. Don't know where they are today. So what we know is that pathogenic microbes are on chiropractic tables. Virtually every time we look, we find either staph, a host of other pathogens, or methicillin-resistant staph, which is of utmost concern. Certainly these could be the transient flora of the day, and might be, you know, flu next time. So we know that there are no protocols in the United States because we've done a search trying to find them. The Australians have a protocol for sanitizing treatment table surfaces and a protocol on hand hygiene. So we hope this will gradually lead us in that direction, and we'll hopefully discuss that at our business meeting tonight as an agenda for new business. To our knowledge, no education campaign has been implemented and tested. So what we did was we surveyed students at three teaching institutions, chiropractic institutions, before and after an ed campaign. We had an observational component I added to that, I think, at one point that maybe not on this slide, that we had IRB approval for both of these. So we were observing the students blinded. And so we wanted to know, not only did the education campaign have an effect on what they tell us in the survey, but could we observe them performing these tasks at a higher rate? So that was included. Here's our little IRB in there for the observational component too, Dana. So 10 questions, we reported on those in a previous study in JACA. And so they were Likert type questions where we were able to look at their responses from they either, you know, strongly disagree to strongly agree, and then we dichotomized some of those. I'll go into that a little bit later. But the ed campaign, I put some of the components to this education campaign up there. And thank you.
Close enough. I don't know you're going to cure that.
We developed a PowerPoint for faculty and for students where we showed them what MRSA lesions could look like, and we said, look, we know that this is present on chiropractic treatment tables. This is just one of the things that's there. Hopefully you never see this, but these are pretty nasty, and they resist the, and Kara could probably tell us more, the second and third line of antibiotics, you know, for staff. And so this PowerPoint was vivid in that it showed them what to do, it showed them what the risk could be, and it showed them in a loss frame method of communication and in health communications the negatives of it, but it also showed them a game frame message in that hand hygiene and clean hands can negate some of this. So we had these little badges on the clinic faculty's lab coats, and we had these posters. This is a joint product from the CDC. The poster's game framed and loss framed because it shows you here all the nasty things that can be on your hands, Pseudomonas, Klebsiella, various things, and then it says that you can protect patients and yourself by using hand hygiene. So that's just a few of the components, and we tried to get a policy component because we were following a model called Ecological Model developed by McElroy and others in 88 on communicating health messages. It says that certain interpersonal skills, intrapersonal skills, and community norms will suggest what people will do regarding health behavior. And under community norms, you see institutional policies and laws and legal issues factor in. I mean, seatbelt law. You know, you can legislate behavior. So we wanted a policy component, and we were mixed on our results there. So in our surveys, total number of surveys we collected, over 1,400. You see the breakdown there. Got a little parentheses problem there, but pre and post, we got about the same number. Males dominate the chiropractic field at this point. And then you see our campus response rates. This was taken based on the census of that campus and the numbers of students on those campuses, on those three campuses, at the time we did the survey, which was over this past year. So we put some frequencies up here for you based on some of the questions in the survey. We asked them about the importance of hand and table sanitizing. 73% said it's important or very important. Remember, these are students at these three campuses. Currently practice hand sanitizing or hand washing, we phrase it that way, and or. 36% said they always do this before patient contact. Minority. So change face paper? Yeah, they're doing good there. 98% change that face paper. So sanitize the table surface with something other than changing of the paper. Only 32% reported that, and I figure some of them probably just said that because they thought they were supposed to, because in many places there's nothing in the clinic to use to wipe the table down. So you have to put things in the clinic. Part of our education process was we saw to it that wipes were put in there and that hand sanitizer was available, because we don't have sinks in every treatment room in a large chiropractic teaching clinic. Do you see others sanitize or perform hand hygiene? 11% said they see others always do this. 33% said they see them always or frequently perform this task. 17% never or rarely see others, and that included staff and other interns. Compliance on hand hygiene. What's your current practice? Pre-education, 78% said they practiced good hand hygiene. We broke the Likert scale down. If they said they frequently or always did it, we said that's good hand hygiene. Anything less, we said was poor. So we dichotomized it. 78% before. Post-education, 83% said they were frequently or always using good hand hygiene in between patients, and you see the odds ratios reported there. So a little bit of significance. So sanitizing the table, report 29% reported frequently or always sanitizing the table in the days prior to their campaign, and post-ed a slight increase there. So, you know, with behaviors related to hand hygiene, even in intensive care units, 50% of the appropriate time doctors are doing proper hand hygiene. That's really pitiful, but that's just the fact, so it's a tough nut to crack. We looked at this with logistic regression and, where appropriate, did the stratum specific pre and post, so you could see that. Our overall pre and post was an odds ratio of 1.3. We showed you that. And then we broke this down by campus here, and we reported the Breslow Day statistic, the p-value there, to see an effect. And we can try to explain some of these differences in campus and locations. Basically, we see that at one campus, there was a significant difference in the outcome there. That's the primary campus. That's where we developed this, and that's the Casey campus. I'll at least give you that. And so you would think that with us involved that there might be a little bit more of an issue related to ethics or wanting your project to go well. We may have had more of an emphasis there. You see that slightly more so for males. Don't know why that was. And we didn't see any differences based on trimester. And those reporting frequently or always sanitizing the table surface were also more likely to be practicing good hand hygiene. So those reporting frequently or always sanitizing the table surface were more likely to practice good hygiene versus poor. And we report the effect of the education campaign there. Pretty good jump there for us post-ed. So this is an impact assessment. We're not looking at long-term. We're looking at, could we make an impact after our ed program? And so it appears that we did. And then we had campus in there. We reported that. It was somewhat of a confounder, I think, on that. But if you look, you see the odds ratios there. Campus one, again, a bigger odds ratio. Five times more likely, and then campus three came in next, and then campus two. Not statistically significant on the Breslow Day, but we didn't see any differences in gender, and typically not for trimester, where we took the lower trimesters and the higher trimesters and tried to look at them, you know, in a binary model as well. Just didn't seem to make any difference what trimester they were in. So perceptions of what others do. Pre-education, 39% perceived others were practicing good hand hygiene. Post-ed, 50%. See the odds ratio there. Again, no differences controlling there. Differences were noted in actual good hand hygiene practices among those who perceived others practicing good hand hygiene. So, you know, social learning theory tells us that people learn vicariously. And so if you have a person modeling a behavior, a lot of times they will adopt that behavior. Well, guess what? In hand hygiene, Not so much. If the doctor or staff supervisor is modeling it, yeah, they're slightly more likely to do it. But if the doctor that is the role model doesn't do it, they're a lot less likely to do it. So kind of an interesting factoid there. So differences in good hand hygiene practices among those seeing good hand hygiene practices. We gave you some stratum specifics there based on the campus. The reason I put this in here, you note that I have artifact introduced. Well, you just never know what's going to happen. We had these two guys on our clinic staff that Dr. Ramsran and I now refer to dumb and dumber, who decided that they would put out misinformation in the middle of this study, and that misinformation had to do with how you hand sanitize. They handed something out to students and other faculty people that said, you should not use antimicrobial soaps to sanitize your hands because that could lead to microbial resistance. Well, guess what? If they had paid attention in the education session, they would see that we did not advocate that type of hand washing. We advocated regular soap or alcohol-based gels, which is what the CDC protocol called for. So we felt like maybe that would explain a little difference here, even though you see not that big a deal maybe, but still, Campus 1, which was Casey Campus, we came in last there when we broke that down by stratum, and I think that artifact being introduced is one of those things. We had these guys saying, why can't we use yogurt, a couple of these guys, to hand sanitize because alcohol is allopathic.
Oh, no.
So, it must be. I didn't know that, but I mean, it, you know, I guess it is. So, yogurt, it's natural. Chiropractic's natural.
The alcohol I drink is purely chiropractic.
So, and I'll give you a little caveat here on the observational component. You know, one of the things that we had to do, Dr. Ramsran teaches a couple of the technique classes. This is where we tried to do the observational data. This kind of got out of hand. And he's on the study, so there's a little bias introduced there. We almost didn't report this, but we had a positive finding. So, you know, so... I'll put that in there as potential bias, pre- and post-educational differences in what we observed, you know, the odds ratio 2.6, we saw a difference in what they were doing, but this varied based on whether they were contacting the patient, whether they were hand sanitizing prior to contacting the patient, or after they had touched that patient, and then were either moving on or backing off to listen to the instructor. So we think that they perceived that, okay, he's watching me, because he's modeling this behavior, you know, he's saying, okay, let's get ready to see, you know, to palpate this patient. And so they were good at modeling the behavior right after they saw the doctor do this. After contacting the patient, look, there's a difference there. And then I put this confounding effect down here for you to see in an adjusted odds ratio there because campus was a confounder. And one of the things we feel like might be involved there is there were very, very low numbers in campus 3 when it came to observation. It just had to do with whether we could get technique instructors to work with us, you know, or whether or not they did it, you know, when they agreed that they would do it. So sometimes our numbers got skewed a bit at one campus or another just because we're trying to get buy-in from these practitioners who, as you guys probably know, sometimes don't really want to do anything related to research. So differences in this effect for locale or that strata difference. At Campus 1, we tried to get a policy in place that said you have to do this. And out of frustration because the clinic director there was not really buying in, a late email was sent. We didn't ask him to do that. That basically said, you'd better do this. And so that could have had an effect. At campus, too, there was a strong expectation that this be done, even though there was not a written policy. And at campus 3, no policy was put in place. So issues on compliance, clinic personnel are keys to this. Students were much more interested in this topic and having wipes for the table surface available, having hand gel available, than the clinic staff, I mean, at our campus. And Rod can probably speak to that at Palmer, Florida, but certainly one of those things that is going to vary, and it's just one of those things where, in this case, we had an artifact introduced by these guys trying to hand out information they thought contradicted what we said, but in reality it didn't. And certainly placement of hand sanitizers and adequate surface wipes is important. We were able to do that at each of the campuses, and that's something that could have an effect depending on if they were available. Sometimes a student would go into a technique lab and all the wipes would be used up, so their compliance may drop because the wipes were all used up. Typically they would ask for more, but that could have had an effect. So in discussion, certainly we make some assumptions that these three campuses across the country are somehow geographical representations of what could go on. And, you know, we assume that if you try to do this type of program at your campus that you're going to get buy-in, but that's a big assumption based on our experience. And that results could be duplicated anywhere. We realize that the limitations are that we're not trying to tell you that we got a long-term outcome here. I don't know what they're doing right now, but we know we had an initial impact. And I think that this is just part of the process. If we educate our students, gradually they will adopt this behavior and hopefully take it forward in the practice. That's what we want to do. We're trying to change a behavioral outcome. And so in conclusion, education of students regarding hand hygiene and table sanitizing an education campaign can have an initial effect. We'd like to know, does that result in long-term compliance? Is it an effective means in the surveillance aspect of microbes on surfaces at reducing those? And certainly, how much of a difference a policy component makes? Because an ecological model, you know, you can take the masses dragging, kicking, and screaming if you have a good policy that's enforceable at your institution. So there's your Purell handshake there. And there's my disclosures at the end. But I do work for Cleveland. And there are citations. So thank you. Any questions? I'll be glad to sign up.
We do have time for a couple of questions.
Yes? I'm just curious. Is it not typical offices or schools to wash hands between patients?
I can only speak for myself. But my response from clinicians around the country is, you know, I never really thought of that. I don't cut people open. I don't sew people up. I probably don't wash my hands or do hand hygiene as much as I should.
Well, as far as adopting a policy, why not just adopt the CDC policy?
That's what I'm recommending, is that we adopt a policy that ingrains the CDC's recommendations into our practice patterns. That's kind of what the Australians did. They didn't really invent a policy. They just said, you know, you should be performing good hand hygiene before and after patient contact. You should be wiping the table down after every patient, because otherwise you really don't know. Now, we can talk all day about how you'll deal with compliance issues at getting people to wipe the table down after every patient is, you know, has been put on that table. But we should be trying to issue the gold standards rather than saying, well, we know they're not going to do it, so heck, if we could just get them to do it three times a day, we'd be happy. So that's what I'm trying to
do.
Well, Dr. Ramcharan will tell you that, you know, they, and he can speak to that, but they'll tell you if we catch you not doing this, it's going to cost you. Isn't that right?
Yeah, within the clinical environment now, I think the whole premise also is that, you know, cue to action. If the clinicians do it, the probability of those interns modeling that behavior increases. But the bottom line is, you know, when these interns engage in this behavior, our goal is that they'll take this behavior into clinical practice. And in class, you know, now sometimes as extra bonus points, if the interns do it during their exam, you know, if they do pre and post, they'll get some extra points for that in the practical labs. So again, the bottom line is in the early educational process, we're instilling this behavior, hopefully will transition in clinic and then into their practice. So that, you're right, bonus points are always an incentive.